You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome to Dugout Study Hall, a remedial course in baseball stats and proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm your host and expert layman, Matt Goodwin, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host and your fake baseball economist, Alexander Chase. You can find our show at Dugout Study Hall on the Bird app and email us directly at dugoutstudyhall@gmail.com. We really want your questions and comments, so send them our way. On this episode, we look into what makes an all-star from the point of view of the numbers, the fans, and what we think, pretending that that matters at all. But before we dive into all that, Alexander, how you doing?
Hey, not too bad. We're not going to talk about weather first thing again this week, are we?
We can talk about anything you want. What's new? What's on the horizon? What plans do you have for the summer?
Well, I watch a lot of soccer also. I don't think we talk about that on here a whole lot. And the European Championships just started. So
yes,
between that and Copa America, you can basically start watching soccer at 9 a.m. and stop at like 10 p.m. And there will be like a match on most of the day, essentially, that has some sort of importance, depending on who you ask. And I love that. I am the sort of person who watches like about two full soccer matches a week during the year. So this is like a nice overload.
Yeah, yeah. I have a question for you. I was actually talking about this at work today. We were talking about the Euro Cup and why it's such a big deal and whether it matches anything that happens here in the U.S. And this was my position. And then you can go ahead and tell me where and why I'm wrong, because I'm not as much of a soccer fan. But this is maybe my theory. You know, the United States, all of our sports, except I guess college football doesn't have a great playoff system, but it still has a system. We have playoffs, right? And Euro soccer leagues don't have playoffs. Mm-hmm. So this is my theory. The reason why these things are such a big deal, World Cup, Euro Cup, not only is it that people are playing for the countries that they live in, right? Which is a big thing and sense of pride.
Huge deal, yeah.
But it's a tournament style, which is something that they don't usually get to get behind, and that generates a lot of excitement. Am I onto something here, Alexander?
There are some nibbles where you're kind of wrong. Like, they have cup competitions throughout the year that are just differently important, right? So, okay. Like, in England, they'll have the FA Cup throughout the year, which is completely unrelated from which league you're in. Every English team, like, if we had a pub soccer league, we're capable of being a part of that tournament. we will lose somewhere along the way.
Yeah, right.
But that exists. And then, you know, pretty much every country has something that's similar to that, depending on how inclusive or exclusive it is. But also then there's like the Champions League and the Europa League and the other like intercontinental tournament things, which are also really highly prized, especially by the biggest teams. So the thing you're right about, though, is obviously the feeling of importance of like the 36th match day, like, isn't always going to be there. Essentially, your results have kind of been decided in the same way that in baseball, your results are kind of slowly decided by some stupid base running mistakes in July. So it's really fun to be able to put a gigantic amount of importance on whether, you know, someone happens to be healthy for one random day in July or if someone makes a brain fart. So I love any sport where you get that sort of like, today could be the day that my season ends and I won't have a chance to rectify this mistake.
Mistakes
just make it so much fun.
When I was about 16, I was in Germany for a few weeks in the summertime, and we went to go see a Hamburg-Bayern München game. And the intensity of that game, I'll just say this, it's not, I have never felt the same intensity at any sporting event in America. And that's not entirely fair. I haven't been to, you know, like game sevens of a World Series. But this wasn't that either. It was just a game, and the intensity of that, and the, not even just the game itself, but like the train ride there and the walk to the stadium in the crowd and all of it. It was a unique experience, to say the least.
Yeah, I like to actually sort of liken it in some ways to like college football, but more so and for everyone. So I know this is a baseball podcast, but I do think that kind of like other sports are good too.
This isn't a weather podcast, but we always seem to land there anyway. So I think talking about a little non-American football, we can do that for a few minutes. What we're going to really focus on in this episode, though, is the All-Star game. Obviously, that's not going to happen for a little bit, but the balloting that's going on right now, and the kind of the first run of where everybody is was released the other day by the MLB. I'm gonna try and steal a page out of your book for that. Some people hate it when people call it that, the MLB. So that's just a shout out to you, Alexander. And obviously the Twitter debate and social media and talking heads of sports jumped right on it and have spent a lot of time talking about it. So, you know, with our unique angle, I think there's some cool ways we can look at this. We could look at like if we were to take all of the humanity out of it and the computers were picking the All-Stars, what might they have to say? Obviously looking at then what the fans are saying, and then at the end of it all, what the two of us think, which is clearly the most important here. but before we jump into that, I do want to touch on something that we have talked about in previous episodes and kind of put a fine point on it. I don't know how much more time we need to spend, but I do think it's important for us to address the missive that came out from MLB about pitchers and sticky substances on balls and what the rules are, because I'm actually very surprised at how... strict is, I don't know if that's the right word, but
I think it is.
It's like mid season. It's a total shift once the season's already begun. And I think it's pretty like, draconian too harsh. It just seems to be, first of all, out of character for MLB. And second of all, a little unfair midstream. I was just wondering, quite honestly, what your take on all of this was. We've seen a bunch of pitchers kind of talk about this a little uncensored. You don't usually get people talking the way that they do. You know, you get the softball questions after a game and, well, you know, it's a team thing and it's that and this and the other thing. And we've heard a bunch of pitchers come out and be like, yeah, this is kind of, not great. They've used saltier language. I'm wondering where you stand on all this.
Well, I think there's a really interesting comparison that you and I can draw and have a laugh at is, you know, if you have like maybe a co-worker or another teacher on staff, maybe that's not even on your grade level, that maybe isn't the most like respected by the students, that like isn't taken the most seriously by the students, that suddenly tries to go full on, you know, like boot camp, these are going to be my rules sometime in like November.
Yeah, right.
You know, how are the kids going to take that? I think there's an easy way where it's like, it's your job to listen to the rules. Rules are rules. And you have to follow them. And the logic just kind of circles around that way. And I tend to find that that is just garbage, because that's not how the world works. Like, I'm very much like a, like the fancier way to say it is I'm kind of like a spirit of the law sort of person when it comes to things. Like, I understand that rules are not necessarily what's written down, but so much as like the norms that we have settled in around them.
Yes, right.
We don't ticket people for going 1 mile an hour, 1 mile an hour over the speed limit. Now, there are some places where, like, literally the law is you have to be going a certain number of miles over. So there's a part of that, right? But still, the sign says 60. If you're going 61, you are technically breaking the rule. And I think that sort of speeding analogy really ties into what we wish we could be doing for a lot of this, like, sticky stuff, right? There's so much discourse about this. And I think a lot of people have kind of shown who they are as, like, minds in some really interesting ways. And I think that's another part of it, you know. What are people's biases? How can they talk about it in their field? It's been really interesting to hear, like, from more like the baseball labor side. I listened to Tipping Pitches. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They're a great, very labor-focused podcast. And one of the things they've brought up is how the MLB continues to, like, spin all of this to make it sound like it's the player's fault because they've been breaking the rules the whole time. And, you know,
but it's been very permissive by MLB, knowing full well what's been going on. It's like the parent who lets their kids do things they're not supposed to do in the basement in high school, all of a sudden, you know, saying, oh, whoa, well, I mean, they're the ones doing this, all this stuff. Well, you're the parent. You're the one who's in charge. You're the one who's supposed to be setting the example and being responsible.
Right, yeah. Like, they are the management, right? Isn't their job to manage is, like, particularly the line that I've thought a whole lot about. So I think this is one of those cases where a lot of very smart people have some opinions I very strongly disagree with. And it's kind of interesting to see how those sorts of lines break out. But yeah, I do think that, like, making sure that you kind of fit this into your broader understanding of how baseball and kind of like league politics works is really important, because you have to do that all of the time. Baseball is never just a bunch of numbers. It is a result of people's choices and a lot of money.
Yeah. So the concrete takeaways for me, and then we will move on from this, you know, it's been talked about by us a lot and by plenty of people out there. If you want to hear more about it, there's lots of places you can go. I did find it very interesting that MLB came out and said basically two things. One, it gives the pitchers an advantage, a clear advantage. And number two, it kind of against what I've heard is conventional wisdom, it is making pitches less accurate, not more accurate, that hit by pitches are up. Now, listen, I don't know whether there's real truth to that or whether that's a spin or an angle, but that is what they said. And so
I can very easily talk about why that's bad science, essentially.
I mean, listen, whoever, if you really want to dig into this, you can question the credibility of it. But they are using that as a talking point, as a, you know, the way that I teach kids to write, you know, so cite the evidence. That's the evidence they're citing. I do think that's interesting because one of the arguments that hitters have used is like, I don't really care if they're doing it up to this point, just not beyond that point, is I think they could get a better feel and all of that. We've also heard people talk about how the new baseballs are even worse for feel this year. And that's kind of caused a little bit of an uptick. There's just so many things around the periphery of this. I'm going to boil this down to a couple of reasons why I hate that they've done this way at this time. And those are important caveats for me. I don't have a problem with here's the rule, follow the rule. I do have a problem with here's the rule, we're going to not enforce the rule forever and then suddenly enforce the rule. I don't like that. I don't think that's fair. And I don't think that's something that pitchers can plan for. It's consistency is important when you're trying to enforce or set and enforce rules, whether you're talking about little kids or whether you're talking about adults. When you're talking about humans, expectations, consistency is huge, and this is not consistent. And doing it mid-season, I think, is absolutely deplorable. I think it's such a bad look to say, here we've painted the lines on the field, And then we don't like the way it's resonating PR-wise, mostly because a couple of pitchers have talked about it. I mean, this kind of all goes back to two pitchers disliking each other. And because we think it's a bad PR look for the league and for us, we're going to change this midstream and, again, market it as being the pitchers being the evil, horrible villains of this story, just like they did with steroids. You know, they did the same thing. You know, we're going to protect you. All of a sudden, this information is leaked. And then who are the villains of the steroid story? The steroid users. Now, I'm not for steroids, but I am very much against MLB basically turning a blind eye because they thought it was good for the game and then immediately turning around and blaming the players when suddenly they think it's bad for the league. It's not about consistency of values. This isn't about morals. This isn't about ethics. It's not about right and wrong. It's about MLB covering its own backside. I hate that. That bothers me more than anything.
It's very transparent about that too. You know, I think when you see them concocting a so simple you can debunk it in two lines, like literally, there are non-sticky stuff reasons why there are more hit by pitches. We're finding more people who throw really hard and not who are specializing in like hitting the corners. That's who they are as people. That is a way to be a pitcher. There are more of those pitchers than there used to be, and hit by pitches have gone up mostly as a result of, you know, people gripping it and ripping it.
Mirroring has gotten better too. I think pitchers have gotten better at fooling hitters, and so they're not going to get hit more because it takes that little bit of time to get out of the way away from them.
So when you see, you know, MLB come out and say like, yeah, hit by pitches are up, and also you guys have been doing some weird stuff with goop, therefore the goop is the cause. You don't say something that's that, like, blind to context unless you absolutely have to have a shoehorned-in argument that counters the main argument for why, like, the sunscreen and rosin thing exists to begin with.
Yeah,
they
it's
are
not causal.
Saying those words
necessarily
because they need to have something to counter the prevailing, widely accepted argument, not because it's correct.
Yeah, I mean, I actually use this in class with kids when I'm talking to them about, like, make a point and make sure that your evidence supports what you're saying. If I slam my car door and at the same time across the street a squirrel falls out of a tree, just because those two things happened at the same time doesn't mean my car door closing causes squirrels to fall out of trees. It's just, it's absurd when you take it to that extreme, but it's just as absurd when it's not quite as obvious that it's absurd.
Yeah, yeah, so I think that, you know, this is going to get talked to death. I think that it's really important for us as, like, consumers to kind of know who it is we trust. You know, this is kind of why I tend to get worked up a lot about, like, the Hall of Fame stuff, is it really shows who you are, where you fall on those sort of stuff. And if where you fall is that you don't care all a lot, I can kind of live with that. There are a lot of people who get worked up in really specific directions, though, and it reveals their biases and their lenses, and I think it's important for us to be able to pick people that we can trust on, like, a deliver us the news accurately and with a sort of curiosity.
That's not just about a baseball problem, though. That's
right.
That's an across the board problem,
right? But you have to be curious about the people who are giving you the news, right?
And sure.
A lot of beat writers, local beat writers, you know, they are having to take what are very obviously going to be press releases from teams that are pre-spun and have to decode them. And I think it's on us to kind of sort through who's willing to do the decoding and who's willing to kind of just say what they're told to say, who are the water carriers are.
Sure. I mean, and again, that's a societal thing right now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all sorts of sources of information. That is definitely not a thread that we're going to pull at right now, though.
No, I think we can kind of just leave it at, it's important to be curious about that, and we can rant about a lot of that elsewhere if we need to later.
Or at the very least, have people be transparent about what their angle is, you know?
If
somebody's like, hey, I'm about social justice, and so I do think it matters that Curt Schilling's not a great human being, at least then you know why they are taking the position that they're taking, and you can either accept it or you can counter it. You can, you know, you can digest it in a way that that matches its intent. People who are kind of doing that without being very clear about their biases or their opinions or their points of view and selling it as objectivity, that is problematic for sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our number of the week, and this is going to get into our topic, really. The rest of the show is going to really be focused on All-Stars. So the first round of votes came out the other day, and I'm going to hit you with this number. I'm sure it's different now because there's been a few more days, right? But at the time it was released, the leading vote getter had 857,956 votes. Do you know who the leading vote getter was?
Of course, it was Vladimir Guerrero Jr., the person who should probably be the MVP of the league right now.
Yes, it definitely was him. And there were actually only two players in the 800,000s.
Yeah.
The other was Acuna with 834,287. Now, keep that number in mind. Those are our top two, 857 and 834.
Yeah, pretty close.
Pretty close in the scheme of things, but the number I want to jump to here, I'm going to just switch over here to a different screen so that I can get this number exactly right, is the lowest number of votes for somebody who's leading.
Like in their position.
In their position, right, is 295,478, which is, that actually blew my mind when I saw the discrepancy there. And that's Ozzie Albies for second base in the National League.
Yeah, which is, I think, of all of the people and of all of the positions we're going to get to, probably the one that's been kind of most difficult. There's been a lot of interesting discussion about this online, and I think the interesting thing about this I want to point to is that you can disagree quite a bit about a category, right? It does not seem as though people are mightily disagreeing about who should be the person selected at a lot of positions. And I want to say before we get too far that I think the public's done a really good job. I think the leaders that we're going to get to today are pretty deserving. There are a couple people who are like in second or third who maybe aren't, and I am going to have a good laugh about that. But I kind of want to tie that back to a whole other thing. Like Ozzie Albies, has he been the second, or has he been the best second baseman in the National League? Man, I don't know. Probably not, actually. I think other people have been better than him. But fans in Atlanta are voting and care. And
sure.
I want to just say that before we kind of like get too far, like that's also a thing that I'm very happy about, that people care enough to go do this.
Yeah. I have this little teaser for later in our pass fail segment talking about the process itself and the fact that fan voting is the way this is done. That obviously matters if you have a rabid fan base that's going to bolster the candidates from that team. And maybe somebody who isn't the quote-unquote the best gets in, but if you feel strongly, go vote. You know, call your friends and have them vote too. And unlike...
Do you need to go door knocking to get people to vote
some door-to-door campaigns. That. But I was going to say, unlike politicians and political races, you are allowed to vote more than once in all-star balloting. It's not illegal. It's encouraged. So, you know, that it's a wild card. And I guess whether you like it or don't like it is going to depend upon whether you like the variability of that. But we'll circle back to that when we get to pass-fail. I just thought it was really remarkable that there was such a discrepancy. And let me ask you this. Do you think that it's because people are just super divided, or do you think people are like skipping that and not voting for somebody?
Okay, so I think it's pretty easily because most people are voting for like all of the guys on their own team and then maybe the one or two guys they know elsewhere. So what gets you to vote? One, you're a fan of a big team that's doing well, so you're actually watching the games, and they tell you to go vote, and you go vote. And that's how there are Dodgers at every single position in, like, the top five, even though, like, which dude on the Dodgers has even played 10 games is often, like, a serious question. We'll get to that. But that's one reason why you vote. The second is that you're someone like me who cares about a handful of players, cares about the game, and will just vote because they're curious. I've only voted, like, three times. One of them is because I saw an Orioles tweet about Cedric Mullins, and I was like, oh yeah, I should go vote for Cedric Mullins. One of them was because I was doing the prep for this show, and the other one was because I was doing the prep for this show and I wanted to vote again because it changed my mind.
There you go.
But, you know, like, how many people out there who are, and I actually want to get to a team really quickly, this might be going a little bit out of order, but a team that doesn't have anyone really represented, it's playing pretty well, is the Milwaukee Brewers. there's just not as many Brewers fans, even though the team's pretty good. They don't have any super standout guys, but if they were a big market team with a huge fan base, you'd probably see some more of their, like, pretty marginal guys who don't deserve. Yeah. Like, Dan Vogelbach would have more votes.
Well, I mean, I think it's
important. Omar Narvaez would have more votes.
Important to note, and I know that this is going to make me sound really, really old, but over the last 20 years, the way that fans vote has shifted so much. I mean, I remember being a kid and the only way to vote was to go to a game. You had paper punch out ballots and potentially hanging chads. I'm not really sure, but it was like
the butterfly ballots.
I just remember poking holes.
Was Jeb Bush in charge of voting for the All-Star game?
Oh boy, I certainly hope not. And I don't believe the Supreme Court has ever had to weigh in, so that's good too. We'll keep those things separate. But I think that really, really, really matters when you're talking about how many people are going to games, but also, you know, if I happen to be watching, I can vote on my phone. It's literally attached to my hand most of the time. Yeah. You could, yeah, and people can write algorithms. You know, there's just so many things that make it so vastly different from when this was conceived as the way we are going to vote for people into the All-Star game. There was no such thing as the internet and smartphones, right? And so I think it's awesome that it's gone that way, but it certainly changes the formula. And one of the things, you know, I write a kind of not a roundup, but like a, you know, best things that happen in baseball, and we try and focus on the goofy rather than the actual performance. And I'm scrolling through tweets for this article that I write Monday nights, and I there was so much vote for this guy noise, and I say noise with love, but teams promoting their players, players promoting their teammates, people complain. I mean, there was so much of that. Really have to wonder, like, how much of that really makes a difference in the end. And then on top of all of that, and this is another piece of the pass fail, another little teaser, is this is only for position players, and we get no say in pitchers, which seems a little arbitrary, and I don't understand, but it is the way that it is. So, you know, I think what we need to acknowledge up front is this is not a perfect system. It's far from a perfect system. So let's find the fun in it, knowing that it's not an ideal system.
Yeah. So I think we should move from there just directly into the ballot.
Yeah,
because we can talk about this in theory a lot, but this is way more fun in practice.
Yeah, let's go. So this is really our central question, which is what makes a player an All-Star, and we're going to kind of dissect that in some different ways.
Clearly, the answer is that they get their game on and go play.
Yeah, I was hoping that there would be a Smash Mouth reference. The show title is obviously an homage to it. It says, "Hey, now you're an All-Star?" Question mark. So I'm going to pat myself on the back for that right now. Another visual cue for the audio podcast, but, thank you, Alexander, for making sure that made it into the episode. That is excellent. So let's take a look at the ballot. So let's start right where they start, right? Which is first base. If you go to MLB.com and submit a ballot, you're going to start with asking about first base in the American International League. So, the leading vote getters right now, are Vlad and I believe it's Max Muncy. Am I correct about that?
Yes. And I have to say, when we said that people were doing a good job, this is what we're talking about. For the most part. Vladdy is first. And then you got Jose Abreu second and Yuli Gurriel third, which is actually both those guys have been pretty okay on the National League side. You got Freddie Freeman second and Anthony Rizzo third. A theme that I want to point out is that Astros fans seem like they are voting like crazy.
Yeah, a little backlash for everybody hating on them.
Yeah, so there's a couple other guys on this list who I think could be getting some more love. If I had to say who am I going to give my second vote to? Matt Olson would be getting my second choice. Now he's I think currently in the top five in home runs. obviously the fact that there's going to be a day or two and people have a chance or two to change that up will change things, but he's sitting at 18 home runs right now, which is two off the pace, or probably two, four off the pace of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's been really good. We talk about like how you would measure that, though. This is kind of like an authority discussion. So I want to ask you, like, if you're trying to figure out who you want to vote for, what do you care about?
You know, I think what makes it hard is that a lot of people, so a lot of fantasy players know players, and I think that's an advantage they have when it comes to these discussions. A lot of baseball fans know their teams, so they're not as much of an expert on players outside. So if I'm looking at this and I'm a baseball fan and I don't know the league as well as fantasy players would, I'm going to go to stats. I mean, I think that's where you go. And if you're especially not a fantasy player, again, you're going to go to the famous stats. And this is actually something that I want to bounce back to you and ask you about how you feel about this. But when you go to the site to vote, MLB has picked some stats and they've put them up there so that people can make comparisons. But they're kind of the standard stats: average, home runs, RBI, OPS is on there. So we as a fantasy community have kind of made this shift towards there are maybe more meaningful ways to measure performance and to flesh out this guy's a better player and his skill set versus somebody else's skill set, and that's all absent. So if I'm a casual fan, I'm going to be looking at those stock numbers, and I think that's actually having a tremendous influence. And it may just be somewhat coincidence that the players who have those best stock numbers are kind of the best players, but I think that there's more to this, and I'd love to get your kind of take on that.
So right now in the American League, at first base, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. leads with 56 RBI. He's also the best player at this position and in the American League and probably in baseball through the first however many games right now. So I have no qualms with that.
Right.
Second on the ballot is Jose Abreu, who has 51 RBI. Third is Yuli Gurriel, who has 48 RBI. Guess what? The only person who has more RBI than either of them is Matt Olson with 49. People who with the most RBI are highest. Now, I don't think that OPS is actually a terrible stat. It's a weird stat. It's a dumb stat, but it's dumb but right. It's OPS doesn't have a unit, right? It's not a number of bases per inning, right? Or how often you reach base. It's literally adding together on base and slugging, which have like different scales. The thing, though, is that OPS, if we're just sorting by that, you will almost always, except for like the weird things about like park adjustments, still end up with a list of the best players at the top. That's not true for batting average. But if we just look at OPS right now, like, you're going to get accurate who's good answers. So, there are some reasons why this is going to be funky, right? Is Yuli Gurriel going to hit 318 the rest of the year? Does it matter if Yuli Gurriel hits over 300? Does that actually make him good?
I would say in a normal year, it would certainly cause me to want to dig deeper. In this climate where like the MLB average is like 230, right? Or just creeped up to 240 something. I would say, a guy who's hitting over 300 right now is definitely worth taking a look at. It's not a guarantee, but I mean, there's so few of them hitting that well.
Right. So this is all to say that, what are the public's blind spots going to be?
Yeah.
Like the people who don't play for the literal very best and most popular teams are probably going to get a little bit of like the short end of the stick. And
there's always recognition pop as well.
Yeah. You might also just have like the guys who play in pitcher's parks. The Mets offense has been bad, but like, you know, Citi Field is not the best place to play, so you're going to get slightly worse numbers versus if you play in a wind tunnel, you're going to look a little bit better.
Kudos to the voters for not having Lindor, you know, be the leading vote getter. And we'll get to, obviously, the shortstop, but, you know, he's a name, and I'm actually surprised that he's not closer to the top just because he's a name. Oh, I know that guy. He's good. I'll vote for him. That used to happen a lot. I think people are getting better.
Yeah, I think that there's a little bit of that going on with Abreu, who has not been like the best, but he's still been good enough that I don't care. I think another thing that you'll hear like more quant-ish people or more people who want to sound smart because they know some stats, let's be honest, is they're going to like cite like the F4 numbers and stuff like that. And batter war is, I think, pretty good. just like a general primer on how that works. Like, basically, you add up how many runs better than a replacement level player you would be because of your, like, your batting, because of your base running, because of your fielding. Yep. They measure, like, the batting is based off of, like, the same scale as WRC plus, but like per PA, mm-hmm. which is actually WOBA. So it's WOBA based, right? So yeah. WOBA is based off literally the number of singles, doubles, triples, home runs, walks, strikeouts, et cetera, you're doing.
Right.
Now they do have some park adjustments going on there, and they have positional adjustments. So your WAR will be based off of the other batters at your position. So, I mean, like, FWAR is a good stat. I do, though, like, very much acknowledge if a dude's, like, been super lucky, you're still gonna have a good WAR. So I'm willing to kind of make some adjustments where if I don't think someone's actually been that good, Yuli Gurriel, I don't think he's been as good as his numbers suggest. But at the end of the day, this is about picking people that we want to vote for.
So those are two things that I do want to bring up and make sure that we address as we move forward. One is voting for people we want to see. You know, is that fair to say, like, maybe he's not having his best season, but man, I want to see this guy in the game because it's a name and the potential. Like, let's say Aaron Judge in an off season. Like, you want to see Aaron Judge at the All-Star game. The guy can hit the ball 700 feet.
Yeah.
So is it fair to say I'm going to vote for him not because he's the best, but because I want to see him there? I think there isn't an amount that it is fair to say that. And then this is what I really want to push you to, because this is kind of like the crux of our thing. And I think I'm going to back you into a corner unfairly. So I'm just going to preview this with that. But if you were going to either sort by a stat to determine what a computer would give you as the All-Stars, what stat would it be? Or I'll give you a little bit of an out. What sort of stats would you put into the algorithm if we were going to try and program the computer to spit out the perfect All-Star team separate from all of this human stuff that we have going on?
So I think that the thing that I would do, and this is going to be kind of like nerdy, but just roll with me here. I would probably basically take 2/3 like FWAR as we do it. It's pretty good. And like, it's a computer. I'm willing for my computer numbers to be black boxy. I don't always love black box stats, but here I make the rules. So I would do 2/3 like WAR that's based on actual WOBA, and then I would do 1/3 WAR that's based on like X WOBA, basically how good you should have been, or maybe some sort of like, let's take your underlying stuff and predict how good you should have been, maybe like some other stuff like that, like, but only for this year, right? So it's like the guys who've been hitting like a ridiculous number of like line drives happen to be falling for singles.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to some of those guys later. I would want to basically be able to discount that, or like the guys like, you know, Kyle Tucker, for example, we brought him up before, so I don't feel bad about saying this, who just have had some like absolute scorchers just find some leather. You know, like, I would want to be able to adjust for that just for a tiny bit. But
yeah,
I think WAR is a good stat. I think that as long as the difference is really tiny, like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has a 4.2 FWAR right now. That is much better than Max Muncy at 2.7. Mm-hmm. Matt Olson is at 2.4. So like, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has been twice as valuable as Matt Olson so far this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's such an outlier this year, right? It's hard to use that as the bar, but...
Just some scales here, right? Typically, 3 over the course of an entire season is, like, you know, all-star adjacent. More than 5 is, like minor MVP candidate. 8+ is, like, major, like, should-be-winning MVP candidate. And if you're over 10, you're like, this dude is really special. So Vladimir Guerrero Jr. through 65 games is at 4.2 WAR. If you double that and then some, he's like on that like 10-ish WAR 10-ish, path.
Yeah,
which is way better than his dad ever pulled off, to be clear. And just stupid good. So
here's something I like about that.
He's good.
One thing I like about what you're talking about when you use the WAR is that it does factor in the defensive ability. I mean, I think it's not something people vote for, but I do think it makes a difference. It's part of the game.
The way that FanGraphs is going to calculate that is messy. So is everyone else's stuff. I think just having one and being okay with the fact that it's messy, but knowing that it won't influence things too much is fine.
I think it's a really good tiebreaker. You know, I don't know how much influence it really should have. People are watching the All-Star game for offense. I get it. But awesome diving catches and flashy leather in the infield, and that's exciting too. So, you know, all the other things being equal, I do like that being included. Let's focus in here. We're still only at first base. We've got a lot of other positions to go to. Let's just hit this. Do we think that the fans are getting it right based on what we think and also what you think your algorithm that we just talked about would spit out?
Oh, yeah. No, this is, well, to be clear, I would not vote based on my algorithm. I would be a total fanboy, right?
If the algorithm was put out there
and
we compared it to the fans and to what we are saying, I think on this, we would probably all three be in agreement at first base.
Yeah, this is the easiest one. For both leagues, this is really easy. It should be Vladito. It should be Muncy.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the much more difficult second base position. What are your thoughts about second base?
So let's, again, kind of clue people in here. On the AL side, Marcus Semien is in first, followed by Jose Altuve and then DJ LeMahieu. 1-2 are correct. Third is Yankees bias. And I really think we're splitting hairs on the AL side. So we can get to that in just a second. But on the NL side, we've got Albies. Then Adam Frazier of the Pirates, that 324 batting average is probably really helping him out with the olds. Nothing personal.
Yep.
And then Gavin Lux of the Dodgers is third. Gavin Lux has been really good, by the way.
Weird
the past
way
month.
To hurt me, Alex. little throwaway comment. Plus, I did vote for Frazier.
I hate whenever.
Going back to, there's two things with Frazier, and then I will turn it back over to you. Number one, I think he suffers tremendously from being a Pirate. Number two, hitting 324. Yeah, hitting 324 as a nearly everyday player in this offensive climate, I think, is special. I get that it's not the kind of game, and I know all the issues with average and batting average, but if you're hitting 324 when the league average is 240 whatever, I really do think that's pretty special. So anyway, I'm old.
I have no problem,
Alex.
With
we
it.
Get it.
Let's run through like the quanti stuff here, right? So Semien leads the pack in FWAR at second base. He's at 2.8. That's 2.2 for Altuve is second place. Now, I think there's some interesting, let's be aware of how weird the park they're playing in has been.
Yeah.
Like when we're talking about park adjustments, I am skeptical of how much like the Dunedin effect is being kind of like put in here. Because that is just not a real baseball park that they've all been playing in. I did not bring that up when we talked about Vladdy, but here I think it might be enough that if you're so inclined, you could choose to vote for Altuve over Semien. Now, I don't know who that person is necessarily that's not already an Astros fan, but if you're so inclined to vote for the Astros player over the Blue Jays player, I don't think the gap between them is so monumental that you could, you know, really criticize someone for me.
Yeah, and I will say it again. I'm actually surprised that Altuve isn't leading, given that it's close, just from sheer name recognition. Semien's a little bit of a late bloomer here, but what he's been doing has been amazing for sure. I'm actually kind of proud. I'm proud of the people who are voting here that they're splitting that hair and they're not erring on the side of, oh, I know that guy, I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah, one of the things that makes this a little bit complicated is if you're on these leaderboards, they'll have people who are accruing value at, like when they're not at the position as well. So like Max Muncy has been a second baseman. If you pull the second base leaderboards, Max Muncy still shows up. You also are going to get Chris Taylor in there. Now he's not eligible, so like I'm not going to like put him in there. He's an outfielder. He's been playing as an outfielder. He maybe deserves votes as an outfielder. Yeah, we can talk about it in a sec. Yeah. But, you know, the people who have actually been good in the National League, it's much more of like an all over the place sort of thing. Now, Adam Frazier does lead the National League in WAR among people who are second baseman and who are on the ballot of this position. He's at 1.9, followed by Albies at 1.8, and then Ryan McMahon at 1.7. If you want to vote for any of those guys, or if you want to vote for Jake Cronenworth, or if you want to vote for like literally anyone at this position, if you feel like you can make a convincing argument for yourself, I will hear it.
Could you hit me with Gavin Lux's number? What's his, just for comparison's sake?
He's at 0.8. He's had one bad month and one good month. So I think come to the end of the year.
A little recency bias?
Yeah. Well, no, it's the Dodgers effect. I think, though.
Yeah, that's fair, too.
At the end of the year, Gavin Lux is going to look like he's a better player than some of these guys who are getting more votes than him, or that have more WAR right now. He's been really, really good. Like, we're talking, he has been like the second or third best Dodgers hitter since, and oh my God, this is a cherry pick stat, but the day of his first MLB home run this year, which is like, I think like May 5th or so. But since then, you know, he's had like a WRC plus in like the one, like 30s or higher, you know, which is really good. So I just want to say, like, I don't think that'll look as horrific in hindsight.
Yeah, no, I'm not hating on Lux. I'm not. I was just really, it was just a genuine curiosity because he's third. That Dodger effect is definitely something worth considering.
All right, so it's a laugh.
So
you voted for Frazier? I voted for Frazier and Semien.
Yeah.
I'm voting for Semien here personally. And then I think just because he's a Pirate, I'm voting for Frazier as well.
I think it's hard. The size of the market, the team is not all that exciting right now. So I think he's probably suffering a bit from that. So I like the underdog.
Yeah. All right, third today.
Third base. Let's talk a little bit about third base. So let me just scroll to the right spot here now in the
it's
AL.
A weird way they have this on the screen. Just separately.
Yeah, I don't like it. They don't have it back to back league wise. At least the one I have up. So I got a nice anyway, big screen. Bear with us. Yeah, I either need another screen. That was my phone falling to the floor. Everybody, don't be alarmed. Everybody's okay. Everything's okay. Well, I don't know. We'll find out afterwards. If it's got a cracked screen, it's probably best for me to not know while we're recording things where I'm not supposed to swear. So the AL leading vote getter at third base is Rafael Devers for the Red Sox, followed by Yoan Moncada and then Alex Bregman. Again, it seems to be this like push and pull between Astros haters and Astros fans. In the NL, third base, number one is Chris Bryant, number two, Nolan Arenado, number three, Justin Turner, another Dodger. I will just lead with who I went with. I did pick the number one choices on both sides, Devers and Bryant. I was actually surprised at Bryant's numbers, and they did seem to be reasonably better. Again, I didn't look at those WAR numbers that you're citing, but it seems to be pretty reasonable. And I'm going to say this too. I'm just going to put this out there. You know, I don't go as deep into the stats as some people do. I do think that there is a psychological impact on the fact that when you go to vote, it tells you who's already in first, second, and third. I think that makes you want to pick those people and like go
for
with
sure.
The winner, right? So
I totally agree. Like it very much steers you. Well, yeah. Actually, I would say the particular thing it does, it also keeps you from thinking about the guys who aren't there. And my pick at third base is, okay, he's not first in WAR, but he is definitely the player that I want to vote for probably. And that's Jose Ramirez.
Yeah.
He is like, well, remember, he was maybe a shade behind Abreu for it. AL MVP last year, but like we're talking splitting hairs here. This guy's really good. Who's voting for him though is kind of the question. Like he's not on the Astros, he's not on the Red Sox, he's not on the White Sox,
Yankees, those or the Dodgers.
Yeah, he's not on one of those like teams that's getting just an exorbitant number of fans. Like if you were on, you know, like the Cubs as well, right? Like those are the biggest voting fan bases. Cleveland does not have that same following, and he's got like, he hit another home run tonight, I think. But, like, you know, so his OPS is probably over 900 now. You know, he's probably then, I would say, whenever we post this, going to be, like, joint top or just behind Devers and home runs. And, like, the question is, like, you want to bring in defense? You want to bring in everything else? I think he's probably a little bit better base runner as well.
Yeah.
So I think that he's been at least as, if not more valuable than Devers. One of the interesting things, though, is Moncada is, like, way behind them in like home runs, which is like my bias, as I always love the guys who hit dingers. Moncada's defense is significantly better than Devers, like significantly, and that really helps him out. He's also like, you know, rocking a 400 OBP right now. That kind of helps.
He's been very, very good lately.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with any of those players, and I think I'm usually very rules oriented. I just am. In this, I think I've just accepted the fact that this is so not scientific how we're doing this. And when you put it in the hands of the fans, you're basically making it a bit of a popularity contest or a fan base contest. So if you just embrace that, then, you know, as long as you're not voting for somebody crazy or like angry that that some crazy person isn't getting more recognition, I don't have any problems with that. If Jose Ramirez starts over Rafael Devers, I'm fine with that. I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah. Yeah. They're different players for sure.
Yeah.
And the difference between them is going to be very slight. And, you know, at that point, I think that you're totally within bounds to kind of just fudge the rules as you go. I want to bring
vote
up
for
a nerd
who you want to see. Yeah.
I think a nerd thing that's kind of interesting is if you pull like the third base leaders, blah, blah, blah. Chris Bryant doesn't actually show up on FanGraphs. So I had to go up and pull him up separately because I was like, who is first among National League third basemen? Arenado at 1.8 WAR? And I was like, where's Chris Bryant on here? And lo and behold, he's not on the list. And he's playing as well as any of the guys. He'd be like second on this list. So yeah, Chris Bryant's, I think, is pretty the easy, pretty much just the easy pick here. I do think, you know, it's easy to kind of forget how a couple other guys on this list have been doing. So I just want to kind of call out that Brandon Crawford has been really good this year.
Yeah.
He's technically, and this is what I want to say is really funny. He's on the third base list, though, and he, that seems wrong to me. He hasn't been playing third base. He's been playing shortstop.
Right.
So that's just like other funky things that are going on here. But yeah, hold on a second. Oh, no, I see what's happened. I clicked and once I voted for Chris Bryant, it collapsed the list. So never mind. I'm gonna click change my vote and you'll go back in there and here my being wrong will show up. Evan Longoria, not getting any votes. He's been really good. I think I would vote for Evan Longoria over actually Justin Turner and Nolan Arenado. I know that's a tough one, but you can see that the Giants probably aren't getting as much recognition because a lot of people don't think the Giants are as good as they actually have been.
Yeah, that's fair. And I'm really not ever going to be upset with anybody advocating to vote for somebody. It's just more people who get legitimately angry about who other people want. All right, let's move on to shortstop because we are about 11 to 12 minutes away from our target of our 1 hour time. We always are like, are we going to make the hour? And then we very much make the hour. So shortstop, why don't you take this one away? Why don't you start?
AL side, so Xander Bogaerts is the leading vote getter right now. And then we got Bo Bichette and then Tim Anderson behind him. I think this is yet another case of we've got the best guy right. We've probably got the second best guy right. And then Tim Anderson is a choice that you can make, but he's not the one that I would make. On the National League side, things are much funnier. And when I say funnier, you'll know what I mean. So Tatis is the obvious first place pick. He's also, by percentage of votes, you know, one of the people who's like dominating their category. So like, I believe, and don't cite me here, that like Vlad was approaching 50% of all votes. Tatis was, he was like in the 700,000s. So he was like probably above 40% of all votes.
Yeah.
So second place, Javi Baez. Third place, Corey Seager.
Yeah.
Those are people voting for their team because they're just voting for their team, right?
Right.
There's not someone who's getting the not voting for my team votes, right? There's no one who's voting for Didi Gregorius, who isn't a Phillies fan. There's no one voting for Trevor Story, probably, who's not a Rockies fan or so. And you see where that kind of all turns up. Now, there are people out there who are probably going to vote for Trey Turner over Tatis. They are dumb people that should be disregarded. And that's the very important part of people talking about the All-Star discussion. So we can just know who to mute.
Well, way to pull your punch there, Mr. Jace.
No, they're basically, it's all just like people who are saying some really dumb coded language about what kind of ball players they prefer and don't actually pick the best people.
That's the part again that bothers me. Like I'm gonna kind of pick this person mostly because I want to, and then I'm gonna go find a bunch of numbers to back up my argument and tell people why they're wrong. And like, look, just say that you just want this player, that you're a fan of the team, that you're you have their poster on your wall as a grown man. That's fine. It's okay.
Now I want to say, and this is really funny because Turner has played, you know, 25% more games than Tatis. They're actually tied in WAR right now. But this is like an obvious, okay, look at the context. Who's actually been good? Turner's got a 125 WRC+. Tatis has a 162.
Yeah.
So if you were to give Tatis some more plate appearances, he'd be more valuable than Turner.
Now, if I'm the Padres, I really don't want Tatis going anywhere near the All-Star game, but that's a different discussion.
Yeah, because I'm not them, and I do want him going everywhere near that All-Star game. Yeah,
I mean, it would be. I mean, I think it would, even as a baseball fan, it would be devastating to see him get, you know, throw his shoulder out again trying to do something crazy. I mean, he should definitely not be in the Home Run Derby.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. A guy who's not, and here's a really funny bit, a guy who probably should be on the list on the AL side, above Tim Anderson, is Carlos Correa, who is actually ahead of both Tatis and Turner in wins above replacement. Again, he's getting a ton of PAs, which helps.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's been really good offensively. He's been really good defensively. Funny thing is, like, pretty much all of the candidates who are getting votes other than Tatis and technically Bichette are, like, really good defenders. And I think that's one of the nice things about, like, the All-Star game, is being a good athlete typically also makes you good in the field, unless there's something weird going on or you're just being played out of position because your bat's so stupid good.
Rafael. I'd be interested in, and I'm not asking you to run this right now, but I would be interested in if you were to take, like, the top six shortstops, three from each league, and run the war per game, where Tatis would, he'd probably come out.
Oh, he'd be first,
on top, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We don't have to run that. You could kind of just look at the numbers and just kind of, like, prorate it.
I mean, I would be interested in what the actual gap is, but we don't need to do that. I just, I think that is interesting, especially if people are going to be so gung-ho on that. You can't just sort by the column. It doesn't tell the whole story for somebody who's had been out for a while.
Yeah.
All right, I'll try this. I want to skip outfield. Let's do catcher and DH. Obviously, there's no DH position in the National League. I think catcher is another one of those positions that's kind of like meh for, I mean, it's meh for a lot of other reasons too. To me, the DH is very clear and obvious.
Yeah, So we could run through these.
Let's do
quickly.
That and then come back to outfield and wrap up there.
So in the American League, we got Salvador Perez, who is the correct choice in the American League, to be clear.
That's who
in
I first place.
He's way ahead of everybody else in, like, he's been good enough that if he wasn't catching, he could make an All-Star like appearance as like a DH. Like, that's how good he's been. Mm-hmm. If it weren't for the fact that the guy who's actually our pick there has just, you won't get there.
Yeah, right.
Second place there is Yasmani Grandal, who I would consider voting for just because it's very fun. And then third place, and I want to say this with all of the fun it deserves, is Martin Maldonado, who has a 170 batting average, 4 home runs, 17 RBI, and a 526 OPS as of me reading this screen. Martin Maldonado, let's go ahead and pull up the war here for catchers, because again, this is just so fun. Good job, Astros fans, by the way, for getting out the vote.
Catcher gets a lot of, I mean, I know it's for all of them, but it does get a big boost if you're going to try and think about these numbers in the context of other position players.
Yeah. Oh my God. Also, you have to like change your qualifiers for catchers if you're doing some of this. But I'm going to say Martin Maldonado. Does he have a negative WAR right now? I think he might. Maldonado has been worth -0.1 wins above replacement.
Well, there you
That is absolutely beautiful. I want to say just great job on the get out the vote efforts there.
And I also want to point out for Grandal that for people who are more casual baseball fans are going to look at his average and want to vomit in the bushes. But he has been getting on base crazy, right? Isn't his OBP like...
It's .386 as of this writing. So there are some people who are ahead of him at catcher.
Discrepancy there is pretty
Narvaez,
insane.
Posey. But yeah, it's just like he's sitting at a 27% walk rate. I think that having that at the All-Star game is great. So him being in second, I'm happy because I just want to see him draw a walk at the All-Star game.
I just think it's crazy. It just in case people are confused, you know, they go and they're like, this guy's number two, he's hitting like 178. That's why. I think a lot of people recognize that he's actually, especially fantasy community people, know that he's been much more valuable than 178 as a hitter.
Now, on the NL side, there's a really interesting discussion to be had. The guy who's in first place, it's obvious why he's in first place. Buster Posey, 327 batting average, 964 OPS. Those are obviously... Yep. But he's also a name, right?
Yeah, right.
The guy who arguably is the other option to me, Will Smith, slightly lower on those numbers, but has been like just really exceptional at everything. He's not in the top three. Again, where are you, Dodgers fans? Get out your vote. Yachty is second. Third place is Wilson Contreras. Those are the names, right?
Yeah,
Will Smith isn't a name yet. Now, Will Smith, definitely the defense is what's really, like, propping him up. But he's been good at everything. But I think that, like, you know, we're going to send more than one catcher for the National League. They're going to get it right. I imagine Will Smith goes.
Sure, but, like, yeah. And the manager's pick, right? Or the players pick at some point, too. Don't the players vote somebody in?
We'll see. He would be deserving to me. So, like, I think there's some part of me that's just, like, he's not up there. Maybe in some of my ballots I'd vote for him. But Posey's been better than him so far this year. So I think...
Yeah, and I think it's kind of cool. I mean, how many more chances does Posey have? He's probably
also,
not...
He's come back to be this player after not being this player.
I think it's worthy of recognition. And I was looking at it, I was like, do I really vote for Posey here? I mean, those numbers look great, but there's got to be somebody else. And you know what? Again, I came back to, like, I think it would be a really cool story to see Buster Posey make an All-Star game after years of, like, going undrafted and sitting on waiver wires and all that. To come back and be relevant, I think is pretty awesome. All right, let's talk about DH American League. To my mind, there is only one choice, which is actually tough because Alvarez has been really, really good. Injured
so
for
JD
a bit.
Martinez.
JD Martinez has been very, very good, but I think you got to give it to Otani. Now, maybe you make the argument you don't vote for Otani because he's going to go as a pitcher. maybe he swings a bat
argument.
While he's there, and it's
that
an extra person who
can
go.
Very wrong argument.
But if you're giving it to the person who deserves it most, I think it's got to be Otani, and that's who I picked.
Yep. I don't think we need to say much else there.
We
will say more later. I cannot wait to see what he does with the All-Star game.
All right, let's talk about outfield. We are a bit short on time, so you know, talking about six different players, I think maybe
there is 18
couple,
different
right?
players who are
well. That's what I mean.
Here, right?
Six going, then all of the players who you could vote for. It's a little overwhelming, actually. The list gets to the point where, like, you have to kind of remember who's at the top of the list when you're looking at the bottom of the list. There's a couple of names I want to point out and get your take on. I think Cedric Mullins is not getting enough love. I think Nick Castellanos is an interesting name. I think Jesse Winker is an interesting name. I think Alex Verdugo is an interesting name amongst the names we all know, the Mike Trouts and the Ronald Acuñas and you know, Soto's, those guys that, you know, the young stars and the studs. But we don't have to talk about all those guys, but is there anybody there that jumps out to you?
I think you managed to name a lot of the guys that I think are a little bit under the radar who, like, are deserving, right? So I'm going to run through the top 10 in outfielder war real quick just to kind of, like, give people a here's who the things would say, and then we can kind of, like, run through some of the funny things about them. So Castellanos is first at 3.3. He's been really good. Acuña is second at 3.2. He's been really good. Cedric Mullins the second is third. Now, he's first. No, he's second in plate appearances among the top 10. Number 8 is Mark Canha. He's actually first in plate appearances among these guys because he's playing a ton, right?
Yeah.
The top of the lineup for a pretty good team. If the Orioles were better, obviously everyone would be voting for Mullins, but also he probably would be batting more and getting more opportunities to show off how good he is. So that's like an interesting, like, combination effect here. Anyways, so Mullins third, Winker fourth, technically Bryant is fifth on this list. Fangraphs being silly. Brian Reynolds at sixth. Trout, notably in 146 PAs, is seventh. Canha eighth. Mookie Betts at ninth. What a funny thing. Mookie Betts has been, according to their metrics, a negative defender this year. And he's still here because he's been really good without hitting a ton of home runs. Chris Taylor, 10th. And then because I struck... Chris Bryant, I want to say 11th, Ramon Laureano, also injured currently. He was just incredibly good. So I think any of those guys would be kind of like computer guys that you could throw out there as, like, here's the guy the nerds like. There's been so many interesting stories, guys succeeding in different ways, that I really think that you owe it to yourself to pick at least one person on your ballot who you feel like is kind of a wild card. So let's kind of run through this. On the AL side, who do we think are, like, the really obvious guys we have to get?
I mean, I think it's remarkable that for as long as Trout's been out, he still has those kinds of war leads. That's, and you, again, you, do you want to have an All-Star game that Mike Trout's not at? I don't know.
He's going to be injured. So we're going to have an all-star game where
sure,
Mike Trout
but
will
I mean,
play.
You know what I mean? Like, even when you're injured, a lot of the guys, if they make the team, they go. They're part of the festivities. They're, you know, taking pictures. They're interviewed on the sidelines. Maybe if he's injured, he helps do the home run derby. Who knows? You want
helps,
him
yeah,
and
funny.
His personality there. You know what I mean?
Yes, I want him to be talking about the weather at the All-Star game. That is his personality. Yeah, so I will give him a vote, by the way. I'm totally good with that in terms of value per game. Like,
yep. Somebody I mentioned before, WRC Aaron Judge.
Plus. Yeah.
Aaron Judge is somebody that, you know, whether he's been good over a stretch, he has the ability to be an absolute monster in one game. I think that's
a great All-Star guy. I
yeah,
would say.
Right. Buxton's hurt, right? Still.
And right now, by the way, those are the top three in the AL are those three guys.
Those three guys.
I think if
yeah.
those are who you're voting for, cool. I'm not going to vote personally for both Trout and Buxton. Though I think Buxton's been good enough that like you got to think about him.
I think it's fine, but I also think this is the one position where you can pick more than one guy. So if you know you pick like a this guy deserves it. This guy is somebody who I want to see there, and this is somebody who I think is under the radar and deserves a little love. I think that it's okay to go that way too. Michael Brantley's hitting really well, right? He's ninth.
He recorded a triple double the other day. Isn't he hit three doubles?
That's pretty awesome. A little basketball stat. Little b-ball humor.
I'm personally voting Trout. Mullins, and then I'm just scratching my head endlessly to figure out who my third pick is.
Yeah, my third, I picked Judge. Those two, and I picked Verdugo. I'm a Sox fan, you know. I'd like to see Verdugo go. I think that would be fun. But if you pick Judge instead, I get it. I'm not gonna, you know, get all angry about it. On the NL side, I mean, again, Acuna, Betts, Soto, Harper. There's four guys right there who you really want to have at an All-Star game. But how do you not have Castellanos and Winker, who have been amazing? Ketel Marte has been really good, right? So I know that we're splitting hairs here over three guys, but the reality is a lot of these guys are going to wind up on the team. It's just not the ones that the fans are going to vote in. I think the National League is a little harder. I honestly do. I think there's a lot more of talent at the top, or at least production at the top, with a blend of guys who have names and who are maybe a little bit less well known. I'd love to see Winker go. Just because
he's voting right now.
Yeah, he's really
he's
come into his
to.
Own.
Right now there are two Cincinnati Reds who would be starting. They'd be my vote getters. I think the voters have this right now. Castellanos, Winker, and Acuna's first. Like those are the guys who should be going as the starters. But then you go down the list, who else is going to be going out as a starter? It's still the people who are up there in votes. Like Mookie Betts deserves to be going at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're like kind of annoyed. Now, Juan Soto's fifth. I still want him to go.
Yeah.
Selfishly, but he hasn't been there. Chris Taylor, though, sixth. Obviously, there's some Dodger stuff in there, but Chris Taylor definitely deserves it in terms of how good he's been this year. So I just generally think that there aren't a whole lot of guys who are getting like horrifically snubbed by the voters on the NL side in the same way. I think it also is just the AL's been more fun and more of the good guys in the NL have been hurt. So like calling it a snub is like kind of weird. Like Christian hasn't been himself, right? So yeah, I think
I'm fine with Yelich not being there, honestly.
Yeah.
And I actually like Yelich a lot, but I don't know. I do want to get to our pass fail because we teased it earlier and I think that we need to talk about it. So this is going to push us to maybe we're going to actually, instead of being one of our shorter episodes, it's going to be one of our longest. But I do think this is an important thing, even if it's really quick. I want you to talk to me pass fail two things. One, how do you feel about the way MLB does this, where the fans vote for the starting lineup? And number two, how do you feel about fans not voting for the pitchers while they do vote for the hitters?
I think that there should probably be some component for like maybe they figure out who the pitchers are, but the fans get to vote for who starts among them. Like give people some choice, because I think pitchers deserve recognition, even though the MLB and how they've approached pitchers this year has been, and forever, has always been weird, right? I think I kind of get that more and more these days. Like, pitchers are a great TV presence, but they're often quite, like, I don't know, they're just not nearly as fun in person, especially when you're sitting in the nosebleeds like I always am.
Yeah.
So I just feel like they deserve some recognition for, like, how interesting they are. I want to be able to vote for, you know, like, Brandon Woodruff to start for the National League or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
If the day comes and DeGrom cannot go, right?
Yeah.
I would love to be able to do that.
Do you think that an element of this is that they want managers to be able to call up the teams and say, because pitching is so delicate, and say, this is who I want, are you cool with him playing? Give the player and the team a chance to deny it without it being a public thing?
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me too much. You know, actually, I think would be more fun is, I think that the All-Star game could have some more of, like, the really electric and lesser known relievers who have been really good. And I just think that's just a general thing that I would love to see more of. He's hurt right now, but TJ Antone should be an All-Star. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, like, I want guys like that to have more of a chance. And
do you think that would happen? That's antithetical to,
yeah, I think that's the opposite of what would happen if the players, or if the fans are involved. So
what about an idea of, like, the fans vote for the starting offense, but the players themselves vote for the starting pitchers? I don't know. I just, and it's public the same way. The ballots kind of get put out at the same time. It just seems like this anticlimactic thing where there's this huge buildup and stretch out of who's going to be starting the starting lineup. And then, oh, and the manager picked these five guys.
Yeah, it feels fitting, but it feels wrong. But obviously, those are the same thing for me in some cases, right? it feels like what we expect a little bit. But, you know, it's not the end of the world to me. I think there's just, like, a realism about it that you just have to have. And if you have that, like, yeah. I get it.
I think that that's an important qualifier. So before I say this, I think it's so important that we just accept that it doesn't need to be perfect. That and again, that's easy for me to say, not being the guy who's left off of a team who really deserves to go, because I know that does make a big difference in their career and you know, the recognition. So I will qualify that, and I will say that I know that fans voting throws a whole bunch of variance in that can make it unfair. But I still like it. I do. I as much as it frustrates me from time to time, I give it a pass. I think it's really engaging.
Yeah, I want people to care. Give us a reason to care. Give us a reason to check out players we haven't seen. Like, imagine you're, like, a semi-casual fan who tunes into, like, watch the Dodgers once every other week or so, but, like, owns a Dodgers hat. So you're watching a game and you see it come up, you get on your phone, you realize there's a bunch of guys you haven't heard of who are at the top of the list. I don't know. Maybe that gets you to check out what the Reds are doing.
Yeah.
Maybe that gets you to, you know, check out what's going on with, like, Marcus Semien, who's been just stupid good this year. I'm hoping that is the end result. Is that, you know, having a part of the process, even, you know, like, remember, it's not changing anything, right? But it's good to know that other people are, like, seeing this a little bit. So.
Yeah. I mean, this sort of thing usually bothers me because I'm not a big fan of just popularity contests. And, you know, I think skill should win out. But in this case, I do think it's kind of a cool thing for fans. I do hate that fans have nothing to do with pitching. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if just throwing pitchers on a list and saying, like, here are your choices, and doing it just like the offense, I don't know if that's the answer. But it does seem weird that it's just
I think that fans should be able to pick from the starter among the players who are going to pitch.
That's kind of a neat way of doing it. Although, yeah, I bet each year it would be pretty obvious. But I like that. Or the other way around. The fans pick the top five starting pitchers, and then the manager gets to choose, you know, the bullpen and the starter. I don't know. It just seems weird that it's just not there. I don't know. Maybe it's not a big deal and it's just weird and I don't like it and it's not unsettled in my head.
I'm shocked that there isn't, like, any sort of weird, like, anti-campaign to get someone who's, like, really bad other than Martin Maldonado to be a starter. Like, we don't have someone on the pitching side, because that's what would happen, I think, is that the fans would all vote for Alex Cobb or whoever, you know, who's having a bad year, and it would really pile on. Like, that's my one worry.
But I mean, that's never really happened with with hitters.
It happened in hockey, didn't it? I think something like that happened in hockey, and then the guy went and scored. Now, I don't watch as much hockey as I probably should, being a Canadian citizen.
Okay. I'm a big Bruins fan, but I'll admit that not being into fantasy hockey, I'm more of a Bruins fan and not so much a I know the league really well kind of hockey fan. So I don't know. Maybe I should. All right. Well, Alexander, we have talked a lot about All-Stars. We have gone long. I think that's fine. I think that's awesome. I appreciate your time. I do want people to once again just remember off the top, I have started putting the Twitter handle and the email account right at the beginning. Talk to us, send us your comments, send us your questions. We'd love to do something like a mailbag where we could talk about what it is that you want to talk about instead of just us picking. We'd love to match what you're hearing to what you want to hear. Maybe we're not getting anything because we're doing such a fantastic job, Alexander, but you know, it would be great to hear from all of you out there in the podcast verse. But that's going to bring us to the end of this one. And yeah, Alexander, if you could just remind people where they can find us.
Well, they can find you on Twitter at @thecorkedmatt. I'm on Twitter at @chase_rate. And most importantly, you can find our podcast on Twitter at Dugout Study Hall, where you can send us some questions. Please be sure to subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed if you haven't done that already. Leave us a good review if you can be so kind. And if you're not already, please consider becoming a PL Plus member so that you can harass us on the PL Discord. And that's it for me.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.